This episode of Before the Train Wreck podcast is brought to you by the Grondike Soap Company. Guys, I use Tactical Soap and God of War Beard Oil every single day. Tactical Soap is a handmade natural product made in the United States of America from ingredients you can actually pronounce, not endocrine disrupting chemicals that are going to lower your testosterone. Both the soap and beard oil is infused with bioidentical pheromones that are designed by a clinical psychologist and pheromone expert to maximize attractiveness to the opposite sex. Go visit coopersoap.com and that will automatically apply 10% off your order. Consider grabbing one of the trifecta packs to save even more. If you are a bearded man and want a majestic beard like yours truly, the God of War Beard Oil is hands down the best beard oil product I've ever used. Gentlemen, this is the most manly handmade soap that we know of. Other soaps are going to get you clean. This one will get you dirty. Again, you're going to want to visit coopersoap.com now and place your order. That's Cooper, C-O-O-P-E-R, soap.com now.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Good, man. So you're back this week. I had Aaron Cleary fell in last week. That was a fun episode. We were talking about training women. We came up with this topic today of abusive and toxic family on a recommendation. I guess you got an email or message from one of your viewers.
Yeah, I got a message that kind of intrigued me, and he's a guy who is dating someone that he cares about quite a bit, but there's some family drama, and since you're a lot better at reading and you got that dulcet tones, maybe you can read it off.
Sure, I'll give him the radio voice. So kicking it off, by the way, guys, the link to join if you have a question tonight is there. All the calls are screened. Josh is taking care of that, so just make sure your audio and video works and you got your questions sorted. And then he'll send you over to the waiting area for tonight's show. Tonight's show, by the way, again, is brought to you by Grondike Soap and Tactical Soap and Beard Oil. I'll talk about that later on in the show tonight. But let me read off this message you got from this viewer. So he said, could you maybe talk about overprotective fathers? So he's speaking about fathers specifically. My girl comes from a family where they lost their firstborn son 30 plus years back. Her father went mental after that. He was okay with us being together as long as it didn't get too serious. When she started visiting me at home, he lost it, made up stories about me damaging his car, intimidating him, etc. She left home and came to live with me, and recently she sent him a birthday present, which he tore up and returned it by coming to her place of work and throwing it for everybody to see. Her mother says because of the firstborn child, a son that died after receiving a vaccine shot, that he also had an abusive father himself, I'm guessing that means. So he sent you a follow-up to that when he saw that we set up this broadcast for tonight. So he went on to say, we'll be talking about this tonight. Awesome. Just to give you some more context, I don't care what her parents think of me. They're cold, bitter, and depressed people, and especially her father treats me like a kidnapper because their daughter decided to come and live with me. It's like he is making her choose between him and me. Mother is somewhat better, but not too enthusiastic either. She defends her husband, saying that he's actually a good man, etc. It's more that I want my girl to not have to choose between me and her family because she is supposed to continue the family business. She actually left the family business and went to work elsewhere, just came to get distance between her and her father. What I can say is that surprisingly, my girl is not like her parents. She's very warm, traditional, cooks clean, submissive, but in a natural way. And she really makes me happy. What I've seen in person when dealing with her father is that he's trying to compete with me. It's kind of childish, really sick at the same time, but he's more hurt than anything, and his actions, words are very incoherent. Months back when we started dating, he used to tell her that he doesn't need her and that she should find a different place to live and work at. And when she did, he went berserk. Asked her why, she just went and left and said, basically telling her that she is not his daughter anymore, that she can never come to visit again. Really weird behavior. Anyway, so that's about it. Doesn't say anything about any abuse or alcohol dependency, but what's your take on that when you get a super controlling parent like that? Like that's out of the ordinary to a degree I've never seen.
Yeah, there's some damaged stuff going on in this family. And I think this is one of those cases where you really have to separate the topic from the issue. And the topic here is all of this history, and he's got all the history down. And the topic is very seductive because there's all this emotion behind it and detail and stories, and you get to be on her side and you get to feel all these things together. And the topic could be substance abuse. It could be money problems. In this case, it just happens to be this long story about the child that died 30 years ago and whatever. So that's the topic. The issue.
Is that a red herring?
Well, define red herring for me, because I don't really know what that means.
It's just a distraction. It's pie in the sky. Yeah. It's like a cover-up story, right?
I think it's a distraction for sure. Because, and the reason I say that, and this is a case where you need to focus on the issue rather than the topic, is because there's absolutely nothing you can do about the topic in this case. Therefore, the topic becomes irrelevant. What becomes relevant is the issue. The issue is you got someone in your life that you really care about, but her family's bringing her down and her family stands to bring you down. And what do you do in that kind of situation? And you know, I think the short, easy answer is you make sure that she's got a plan in place, irregardless. Which one's the right word? Irrespective or irregardless? I think irregardless. Irrespective. One of them is not a real word. So irregardless, disregardless, anti-disregardless, I don't know. But regardless of what the issue is, you want to know that she has a plan in place, right? That regardless of whether she's with you or somebody else or on her own or doing whatever she's doing, she has a plan just for her to insulate her from this family drama that's coming into her life. And it's really difficult to step away from the topic because the topic is so seductive and is so alluring. And especially when you're on her side and she gets to, you know, idealize you for being on her side and so forth. And you're the good guy after she's dealt with all these bad guys. You really got to sweep all that aside and know that she has a plan in place and you can back her play, but you've got no control over the situation. I'm troubled that this lady has gone to live with him. That's not a great start for things, and that's reducing his options.
How old are they? Did you get any?
I didn't get the age. No, yeah. Sorry.
I mean that kind of matters too. I've never dealt with that level of crazy. Like that's some DEFCON 5 top level, like 17 out of 10 level crazy right there. I've seen some crazy shit go down, but I've thankfully had the foresight not to get deeply involved with anybody like that. I've had the sense about me just let it pass. I don't know, man. That's a tough one. He's obviously got a lot of investments and ego investments into this, relationship that he's got going on where he's living with this chick, but life's tough. I just wouldn't put up with it. I mean, I wouldn't put up with any of it. It's totally out of your control though. I mean, I've never seen that. Like the extent of abuse that I've seen is I've seen her mom abused the father in a sense where my spidey senses start tingling and I'm like, okay, what if she does that to me later on down the road? Mm-hmm. And I haven't got my senses about me and I fall for that nonsense. I remember I was at this, I was dating this girl, I was in my early 30s and we went to her parents' place. They just moved into a new place and it was Christmas Eve, I think. And I was helping them put together some entertainment stand or something like that. And her mom walks in the room, she struts in and she goes, I can't remember what his name is. Call him Bob. Bob, there's that big stone in the backyard. I think we need to move it 10 feet over to the left. Can you go outside and take care of that right now? This is like Christmas Eve, right? Like there's family arriving. There's dinner being made. And she's like pushing this guy around, telling him to move stones around the backyard. And he's an old man too. He's not, he wasn't a spring chicken or anything like that. But you got to be, I don't know, man. Like that's, to me, that's like pushing into past territory. That's kind of like, let's put some arm's length here between me and what's going on. Cause I don't make your problems my problems is one of the things you're going to hear me say over and over again. And I like a seamless, easy, simple, not simple, but relatively seamless life. I don't want to deal with other people's nightmares. And that just seems like too much to me.
Yeah. I think maybe one thing this guy could focus on if he's trying to sort this out is being supportive of her plan to deal with her family, but not being supportive of all the drama that's coming up. That stuff is, it's just an albatross around your neck.
I'm starting to see that this Before the Train Wreck series, and where are we at? Episode 38 now. I'm starting to see that this series is starting to turn into the polar opposite almost of the Playing to Win series that I started on Thursday nights every other night, where we have conversations about playing to win, chasing excellence, that sort of thing. It feels like Before the Train Wreck is defined as the opposite of that, as playing not to lose, right? And when you get yourself into a relationship with a woman that has a toxic or abusive or a violent or whatever, you know, definition the family might be, you're getting yourself in an environment where you're kind of playing not to lose. It always feels like you're going to be doing damage control because she's going to be coming home from work going, well, I sent my dad a birthday present and he came into my office today and he ripped it up and he threw it at everybody. Like, that's not going to make what's going on in your life easier if you have to put up with that stuff.
No, no, this does not fill your sails with wind for sure.
There is a train wreck impending in that one somewhere. So
I hope she, I hope she gets it together. I hope she's got a plan. It should probably involve some therapy to figure out where she's vulnerable to all this drama so she can build some boundaries there. It's probably going to involve having some supportive friends, and supportive friends aren't the ones that just pat you on the head and say you're always right. Supportive friends are the ones that will tell you when you're going down a bad path. It's going to require quite a bit of work, and it's going to require the work of making sure that she doesn't repeat this cycle in her life. And I'm not hearing that plan is in place. Maybe it is, hopefully.
Yeah. All right, guys, the join link is there. If you guys have a question tonight, doing this for 90 minutes as usual. So I got somebody in the waiting area. Brian, I'm going to throw you on in just a second. So just make sure you got yourself unmuted. The link is in the chat. It just says ask a question live, and it's got the StreamYard link. Josh will just screen it out to make sure your audio and everything's working top shelf. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hey, doing good, guys. How you doing tonight?
Good. What's shaking with you? What's your question?
Well, I wanted to touch on a point you guys, Sean's made in the past about following your intuition. A little backstory. I'm 45. I was married for 15 years to a pathological narcissist and just ruined my life. And I've been on about a 3-year plan of getting back. So I'm getting back out there and I'm spinning plates and dating multiple women. And one of the things, Sean, you were in my head. I just finished reading your book. And I had this date set up with this girl. And I was getting that funny little feeling in the back, you know, in the back of my head. And because I'm dating so many women right now, it's, you know, I had her scheduled like two weeks out. So, we were texting back and forth occasionally as the date was getting closer, and I just didn't like what I was feeling. So I broke the date off like 3 days in advance, and, it was like dodging a bullet because over the next 4 hours, I got about 100 text messages, each one more vile than the next, just going down the list. And it was like just clearing the sweat from my brow on that one.
What was it that triggered the spidey senses, Brian? Because you said you called off the date. So why did you call it off? Like, what kind of, you know, tipped you off to it?
Oh, it was, okay. It was kind of a combination of two things. It wasn't real blatant, I'll be honest with it. The first was this really false sense of how cool she was. It was really like this persona as opposed to the real person. The second one, and I probably wouldn't have called it off on just that. The second one though was just hinting at almost kind of behavior that reminded me of my ex. You know, I mean, I was married for 15 years to a narcissist. So it was, you know, binge drinking seems to, I don't know, Sean can confirm, but binge drinking seems to work with narcissists quite a bit. And so she would, she was texting me up one night, just hammered out of her skull and at the same time, really arrogant and almost egotistical. Mm. And so it was just one of those things. It was like, she was like, I would say probably the hottest woman I'd be dating right now too, but I dodged that bullet.
Mm. I don't know, Brian. She sounds delightful. I think maybe you should give her another shot.
Oh, hell no.
But I'm intrigued by that first part of you. You gave the two pieces to your intuition. And the first part was, it sounds like you picked up on a little contradiction between what she was saying and what the reality was. Did I hear that right about the coolness?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So,
and that's, you know, that's one of the things that, it's one of the things intuition is really good at, if we're willing to listen to it, is, you know, all this verbal processing that we do isn't real good at picking up on contradictions, but our intuition notices contradictions between words and behavior if you're willing to hear it. So nice work.
Let me ask you this question too. So So you're dating multiple women in a non-monogamous fashion, also known as spinning plates. We know that Sean doesn't like that term. He has a video on his channel.
I don't have a problem with the term spinning plates.
I'm going to poke at you a little bit on this one.
Knock it off.
You know, given the fact that you've got a couple of irons in the fire, we'll use that term just to soften a blow a little bit for sure. you got a few irons in the fire. So did that help you compare and contrast, and help hone the spidey sense a little bit, just because you have the opportunity to like see different shades, like black, white, gray sort of thing. You can see crazy a lot easier that way.
Totally. Totally. And it's integral actually to my process.
Yeah.
I mean, I was zeroed out 3 years ago. I was a mess, man. And I was left. I mean, she took 75% of the money. I lost two of my businesses. I was zeroed out, and I had to go on triage for a little while. And once I got back out there, I wasn't very good at reading people, man. I was so used to being in an abusive relationship and just going along with it that I really had to do a lot of work just to do it. And then the first time I met, like a really sweet, honest woman who was just about having some fun and going out on dates, man, I was hooked on that feeling after that. And so part of what I do is I don't focus in on one person. It makes me a little too vulnerable. At first it was like that, and now it's just fun. And the second part is, it actually helps in attraction. I know it sounds really weird, but when you're dating multiple women, you don't really have a lot of time to spend on one. And you end up becoming more attractive to her because she's fighting to try and get your time. So, the girls keep getting prettier and prettier and younger, and the schedule looks great. I'm going to a concert tomorrow night, going out for dinner the night after, et cetera, et cetera. And it's all with different women, but it's a lot of fun. So
cool.
Do
you have a question tonight? I feel like we've hijacked kind of the direction of the call. Did you? Sorry.
No, it's good. Really, I wondered more so on Rich, if you've really have any kind of tests for picking out the dark triad traits in women when you first meet them. Specifically narcissism. I've run into a couple women. Obviously I'm not a psychiatrist. I can't diagnose anybody, but I saw some tendencies and traits in these girls, and I just booked it. I pounded sand and moved on to other people.
Have you read and so I'm wondering if you personalities?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so Machiavellianism to me is probably the bigger one to look out for between narcissism and Machiavellianism. Just because if they have the capacity to manipulate you, or they do manipulative things, and everybody's got some degree of manipulation. I mean, for you to be successful in the world, you're going to have a peppering of narcissism. You're going to have a peppering of Machiavellianism, right? To get shit done. I mean, assholes get things done in the world for the most part. But when it comes to women, and as you're kind of going about your life and dating them non-monogamously, just trying to figure things out, that's the one that I'd be looking out for more than narcissist. I mean, a narcissist is easy to spot. They're going to have an Instagram account with like posts daily with them trying to showcase their beauty, right? And if it doesn't get enough likes, you'll see the post get deleted or something like that. Like it's pretty obvious. So you gotta kind of give it some time to really see it show itself. It doesn't always show itself right away. I think Sean will be able to feedback on this a lot more than I can, but I think that the dark triad traits tend to get set aside for the most part, not because it's not obvious, but because you're like, oh wow, this chick gets me. She's so amazing and she's so attentive and she's great in bed and you know, blah, blah, blah. You fill in the lyrics. And it's usually at some point down the road, like you'll start to realize, or maybe somebody else will point it out to you and be like, wow, those are some serious traits there that you might want to be a little careful about. What do you think of that, Sean?
Yeah, the being idealized, and I actually specifically mentioned that in the book. You want to be really careful when you're being idealized, and all three of us, it looks like, you look like you're over 20, Brian. We're all old enough that we should know what's annoying about ourselves. And if what's annoying about ourselves isn't annoying to that person to some degree, if you can do no wrong with them in the beginning, that's a real dangerous sign.
That's good advice. That's good advice. I always like the smiling no test as well. Just tell them no, mm-hmm. give yep. them a little smile, and you usually get that yeah. weird reaction. So, all right, yeah. Common, that covers all me right, quite well.
All right, have a good night. Thanks for sharing all that. All right, so that was a good one. I like that guy. I love it when guys yeah. come on and they share an experience that can be useful to other guys, because
yeah,
that's typically the way that I personally learn myself. I mean, I've learned everything that I have today because I made a lot of dumb choices and got some crap results. So it's like, okay, let's find a lesson in this somewhere, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, if you guys have an experience to share, then definitely drop that on us. Georgie's back. Georgie Porgy pudding and pie. Kissed all the girls and made them cry. How you doing, man?
I'm fine. How are you?
Welcome back. How you doing?
I feel great.
Good.
So let me ask the question. You know, before, you know, I joined, I had kind of, you know, vivid idea of what should I ask. But I started to write down my question, even more honestly. Yeah. So I started to, like, you know, write down what I really wanted to ask. And it comes down to this, you know, how to recover from failure. You know, I messed up, basically. I made horrible mistakes. That's, I mean, on an emotional level, it pressed me down, and I feel like, oh my God, how could you make that mistake, you fool? And I start to beat up myself, and it's like really drops my energy down and just makes me feel horrible. And I know I should not be doing this, but that's all. That's the kind of question, how to recover from failure.
How to recover from failure. What do you think, Sean?
Well, you got that little voice in your head that wants to beat up on you real bad. And all that voice is trying to do is just trying to keep you from making the same mistake. So there's some great literature out there in acceptance and commitment therapy. And it'll teach you how to deal with that little voice in your head, because that little voice is useful. You don't want to get rid of it. You just don't want it running your life. And so I would check into that. And actually, I wrote a book a long time ago called The User's Guide to the Human Mind. And it was a summary of acceptance and commitment therapy and behavioral approaches to dealing with that mind that just constantly wants to beat you up. But what it boils down to is a lot of practice in recognizing what that voice is trying to tell you, and then essentially saying, okay, thank you, I got it, I'll take it from here.
So what are you finding that you're doing? Like, you're just not able to get past the mistake that you made? Like, can you give me an example?
Yes, I can tell you what thing that's, you know, pressed me down. So, you know, I've been a fairly atheistic person entire my life, but for whatever reason, you know, I picked up a Bible and read it. And for whatever reason, I was like, oh my God, I found that Jesus or whatever, like something horrible, seems like horrible thing to me. And I started to become like a really religious person, and I started to change my habits, started to go to church and et cetera. And that thing, you know, changed the direction of my life, because I was never a religious person. And eventually, you know, like 6 months ago or something, I realized that, you know, I come to my senses and I understood that there is no gods or whatever. But, you know, the when I remember how I became religious, it brings, like, as a face, like, feel of shame to me. How could I, you know, believe something so stupid for year and a half? I mean, every time my mind's like, how could you be so stupid to believe in religion and things like that? How could you fall in so low in your life?
Have you read Sapiens?
Oh, no, I have not. What's it about?
Sapiens. It's Yuval Harari. What's the guy's name, Sean?
Yuval Noah Harari, I think.
Yuval Noah Harari. He basically talks about our species, which is, you know, Homo sapiens. But the thing that got us around was gossip. Religion was a big part of that. You know, the belief in fiat currency, you know, paper money is a big part of that. There's a lot of things that men subscribe to, well, humans, sapiens, you know, subscribe to on a large scale basis. And it's fluid, man. I mean, there's some people that fall into religion and they fall out of it, and they come and go in different parts of their lives and times of their lives. I mean, if it serves you and it makes you a better version of you, then I don't see a problem with it. But the problem that there's resentment and guilt. And I can't remember where I picked this up from, but apparently they're the two most negative human emotions you can have. One's against someone else and one's towards yourself. And maybe you're resentful towards somebody for passing you the Bible. Maybe you feel guilty for falling for something that didn't serve you, that, you know, you tried to dispense in your day-to-day life that failed or whatever. But those things are easy to let go of, man. It's like a bag of bricks. All you got to do is stop carrying around, put it down, and walk away from that shit. It's just you have to get good at that skill of walking away from things that don't serve you. How old are you?
I'm 21.
21. Yeah, you're still a young man, dude. Like asking these questions at 21 is a good start. It's not going to take long for you to figure out life. I mean, you'll be a top shelf man by the time you're 30. I mean, you're well on your way asking questions like this. I've seen you on the show before. So just keep doing what you're doing and stop beating yourself up over trivial things. There's a lesson in everything. Look for the silver lining, right? You go through the divorce machine, you get screwed. There's a silver lining there. What can you learn? You have a relationship with a BPD woman. What can you learn? You get into a business deal with somebody that rips you off for $100,000. What can you learn? Right? There's a silver lining there. Look for it. And that's how you can kind of like put down that bag of bricks and just walk away.
Yeah. And at 21, you're supposed to be making these kinds of mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
It's just part of it. Yeah. You have to be making these kinds of mistakes. And if you're so averse to making mistakes that it's running your day for you, then that actually interferes with learning from the mistakes. So you're doing fine. Hey, let me ask you, what's that piece of artwork on your wall behind you?
I don't know. It's just painting.
Okay. No significance to you. No. Okay.
So I have like a question kind of related to this one. First what I asked, how to recover from failure, right? So obviously the mistake I'm making is, after I recover from this religious, stupidity, I read also Quran and, I also read, Voltaire and Cardinal Leo Taxis book that are like famous atheists, that were, write against religion mostly, or Age of Reason by Thomas Bingother. And, now the second question is like, how do I measure like what my facts right now? How should I let these kind of things like push down my energy bar? Because I mean, this is like right now even if like I know it like 20 years from now, if somebody asked me, hey, what do you think about religion? I would feel like, damn, I'm atheist, I don't believe in God or whatever. And because right now I'm so strongly attached to this idea, I feel even more pain, and I'm like, something just, that just really pains me, like, and this drops my energy down. And just, I'm not really able to forgive myself. Or this is what I notice. I ask myself like really hard, like I have these expectations from myself.
Hey, Georgie, were your parents really tough on you growing up?
No.
You know, they have high expectations for grades or, results out of school or anything?
I did not study really well in school. So, my parents literally, they were like, they lost their hope of me. I did not study really well.
But I'm just wondering why you're like beating yourself up so much over a book.
I mean, it's not a book. Like, obviously we're talking about
that. It is a book. It's a book. It's just a very popular book.
It's like horrible book, but for me at last. But the thing is that for example, like I used to be like very fit shape, even far more better shape than I am right now because I back in the gym right like 3-4 months right now. But since childhood I used to do like Muay Thai. I used to go to swimming. I used to go to in the gym training. But because of religion, I was like, well, all these things are earthly things, and I left the gym for a year and a half. And I have dropped my physicality. I'm not nearly as good looking, in physical shape as I am. It's like affected a lot of things in my life. And I can clear, instead of reading books that I usually read, I'm a huge book reader. I just read 10 books in a month easily, and like I started to change my habits, and I started to read religious books instead of like original books I was interested to. So the thing is like too huge. I can see it every day, the mistakes I made.
So what do you think's behind this conversation, Sean?
I'm just seeing a guy who's really driven not to make mistakes. And at your age, you should not be driven not to make mistakes. I mean, you should be, right? But we want to avoid mistakes. But I think you're giving them way too much weight. And I'm like Rich. I'm kind of fishing around for what's going on here that you're so hard on yourself when you screw up.
I don't know. I mean, if I knew that, I wouldn't join this conversation. Right. Actually, right. I wanted to ask this question before, but you, Sean, you were not there. And I wanted to ask this question to you because as a clinical psychologist, I thought, well, he must have an answer to me.
About being hard on yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's something there that's there's something that's driving you to do this. This isn't random behavior. This is actually kind of painful behavior. So the question that comes up in a situation like this is, okay, what would show up if you stopped doing this tomorrow? So let's say that tomorrow you made some big mistake and for whatever reason you decided, okay, I'm just not going to buy into the thoughts. I'm not going to be hard on myself. I'm going to ignore all that stuff. What would happen? Would you get worried that your world's going to fall apart because you're not attending to the errors, or what goes on if this goes away?
I mean, I would feel pain because it would be like I have no control.
Okay.
I have control over my behavior, right? I don't have control
over. Yeah, that's what you have control over, is over your choices. You always have the ability to choose. Even Viktor Frankl, when you read his book, A Man's Search for Meaning, he always had the ability to choose certain things that were within his control, and he was in a concentration camp for a long time, right? So, young man like you should be out like at the Muay Thai dojo. You should be out with chicks. You should be out with your friends. Like, this is not like I'm wondering why you're spending too much time on this question, beating yourself up over it.
Actually, right? about Muay Thai. About women, I mean, it's fairly easy for me to pick up girls and to just communicate with people, because I was 16 years old when I started doing call up watch pickup. I would go like 6-7 hours a day outside the street and talk to strangers. So I have fairly high level skills when it comes to that. So as a young man, I went hundreds of dates, and I don't really am focused on dates too much right now, because it's fairly easy to me. And I'm
so Georgie. I think I know what your task is here, or I'll bounce this off of you. Tell me if it sounds right, that Rich is right. You get to control your behavior, and this has become very important to you to control and to manage things. But there's this part of you that you don't get to control, and it's the part that's throwing all this guilt at you when you screw up.
Yeah, that's what I feel, guilt.
Right. And so maybe one of the tasks for you is to come to terms with the parts that you can't control and to learn how to live with that part of yourself. You don't get to control these thoughts that your mind is throwing at you, right? If there was a switch that said no more thoughts beating myself up for months when I screw up, you would just flip the switch, right? And it'd be gone, but you don't get a choice over that. So what you have instead is the choice over whether or not you pay attention to it. And that's where the work is, I think, for you. I think you pay attention up to the point that it's serving you and you're learning from your mistake. But then beyond that point of diminishing returns, that's when the hard work starts for you of, all right, my mind is beating up on me, but I choose not to attend to that right now.
Yeah. The only thing in your way here, my friend, is you. That's it. And that belief you have is easy to just cast aside, like Sean said.
It's easy to say, it
takes a little bit of work, but I mean, you're on
the man. It takes a lot of work.
How can I put it?
Say that again.
How can I put this to action right now?
Go out and start reading about acceptance and commitment therapy. There's a great book called The Happiness Trap by Russ Harris. Okay. He's an Australian guy. Have you read that book?
No.
Okay. Start with that one, because that's a really nice overview of acceptance and commitment therapy. It'll give you some concrete skills for ignoring your mind when your mind is out of control with beating up on you.
Okay. So let's play that. Let's start. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Jordan.
It's a very good place to start. Yeah.
All right, man. Have a good night. Thanks.
I was amused by Georgie had, here's this guy. He's reading Voltaire and the Quran. He's reading all this heavy stuff. I was reading Green Eggs and Ham when I was his age, but he's got this this image behind him on the wall, and it looks like a Renaissance image. And I expected it to have some sort of meaning to him. No, it's just a picture.
Cock, I'm going to throw you on next, and we got Aziz and James coming up after that. I always give VIP treatment to the guys in my community to let them get in first. If you're interested in joining, links there. It's always pinned in the description. It's entrepreneursandcars.com/community. I'll get rid of that. So it's there you go, Cock. How you doing?
It's all good. Yeah, I'm doing good. Pardon my wearing a undershirt. It's there to distract me from me not wearing pants right now. So it's all good.
Awesome.
Yeah, you gotta mitigate your downsides at the moment. So I had an interesting story, another little fun fact about Conk, but I actually dated a girl for 3 years and we were engaged for 1 year and we ended up breaking up over her toxic family.
Oh, what's the story behind that?
So her family was like hardcore TradCon conservative, where we ended up breaking up and splitting everything around the time Trump was running, mm-hmm. but before he was even like the Republican lead. This isn't going to get political, it's just a side thing. So I always do that, and I've always been an independent thinker. And so her mom was okay and her dad was okay, but her grandma was like the matriarch, and she was straight psycho. And I tried to do whatever I could to not be around her. And but she held the whole family by the balls.
What was the straight psycho? Like, can you give us an example just so we know what we're dealing with here?
Yeah, so everything about her had to do with the most extreme, hard right, conservative, traditional, like fundamentalist Christian values you could think of. Mm-hmm. And it forced it on everyone with a whip, essentially.
So that didn't work for you, though, because you're relatively conservative. You're also very or reasonably religious, I would say, right?
Not to that. She was like, Obama's the Antichrist Christian.
Oh, okay. Got it. Got it. All right.
And like, I was deep diving more with my fiance at the time. She actually just got married, which is crazy, to somebody else. But yeah, this was like 4 or 5 years ago. Mm. But she like refused to like take ownership at all, or like be able to be independent from her grandma. Mm. And I think that's something really important for everybody, is like being able to realize when you have your own toxic family and being able to distance yourself from them. And nobody in that family could do that. So like the majority of her family was great, but the matriarchal grandma that had all of these super crazy worldviews like that and like forced people to agree with her, otherwise she would like cut them off from everything. It was crazy. And so I started talking to her about that. And you could tell it was a sore spot because my fiance kept trying to dodge it over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like we went on vacation to Chicago and we kind of sat down and I'm like, okay, we have to talk this out, or like, I don't know if I could be a part of that family if we're going to deal with that. And she ended up telling me that her grandma tried to exorcise her when she was 4 years old, like exorcise demons, Catholic stuff. And they tied her to
a bed. How do you exorcise a four-year-old?
Exactly. Well, no, yeah, they tied her to a bed.
Oh, like an exorcism you're talking about.
Yes. Exorcise the demons.
Shit.
Because she was born out of wedlock and she blamed her and not her daughter. She blamed the granddaughter that she would be born.
Well, I mean,
so what was your fiance's take on this?
Was something like she like tried to blot out of her memory. She said she doesn't remember any of it outside that she was feeling a lot of pain. And like, it's like one of those crazy abusive repressed memories that she didn't want to think about. And I ended up bringing it out and she refused to like talk about it, and like as soon as we did she freaked out and we broke up a week later because she picked staying with the grandma over talking it out with me or anyone else.
So I mean, the good thing about a matriarchal grandmother is they're not going to live that long, right? At some point she'll be out of the way.
I don't know, she was pretty damn healthy.
it sounds like you avoided a big train wreck there, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm happy we didn't go through with the marriage for like 800 reasons, especially since, you know, I've been consuming Red Pill content. Mm-hmm. But that toxic family was such a huge deal that I tried to bat away. I'm like, we'll deal with it. You know, we'll eventually be independent, be on our own. But no, she was tied horribly to her through abuse. Yeah. It almost felt like Grandma Stockholm Syndrome, you know?
Well, must feel good to look back on that in hindsight. I bet at the time it was probably a lot of frustration and a lot of, you know, like rationalization in your head. But looking back on it now, you're probably going, damn, that was a close one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that I would ever have to deal with that, because it was obvious the fiance was never going to leave that family and cut ties.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like,
so were there times when you were trying to talk yourself into staying?
Oh, I was for like 6 months afterwards. We still talked regularly. We ended up moving pretty far apart. She was in Illinois and I was in Seattle. And I flew to her house like a month after that, even though we were just friends, because we still wanted to talk. Because it was weird, because it was essentially the grandma making us break up, even though we still kind of liked each other. So it was like this really weird like aura around it.
Where was her husband? Where was the grandmother's husband, the grandfather?
I have no idea. I don't know if he was divorced or if he was dead. I have no idea. They never talked about it. And I was with her for 3 years.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
That would have been.
Was it an off limits topic?
I wonder if he committed suicide.
I didn't see a single picture. I didn't see anything. Actually, every female in that family had their first kid out of wedlock, except for the girl I was marrying. She was still actually a virgin. So, well, she was 21 at the time and I was 24, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Way to dodge a bullet, brother.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's crazy. But like I always talk about the craziness of my own family, but yeah, you really got to figure out the craziness of her family too, because you're going to get wrapped into it one way or another. You can't be ignorant like I was. Like, oh, I'll just blow them off. I don't really hang out with them, because she's still going to have those huge ties usually.
Yeah.
You're always going to have to deal with in-laws, especially if they're psycho and do exorcisms.
Red flag number 103.
Yeah.
She had an exorcism done on her when she was 4 years old.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was rough. But yeah, I thought I would share that cautionary tale.
Good. Thank you.
Oh, no problem.
All right. See you soon, brother. Cheers. All right. Who's up next here in the waiting area? Manto. We have another guy from my community hopping in. What is up, brother?
Hey, guys. Nice to see you again. How are you doing today?
Good.
All right. Okay. Thank you for letting me join. I think that I have an experience that I could share with you guys and the people online, and later on a question related to that. So I had a girlfriend, and clearly the boss in the house was the mother, not the father, you know, and she was very dominating, and she used to put everyone down in a feminine way, let's say. And over years in which I was with her daughter, she will transmit her frustrations about her career choices and everything to her daughter. So she would later on pass them on to me. I have a chat. Can't hear. Can you hear me now?
Yep, we can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah. Okay.
So, can you hear Manto, Sean?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Okay. I had a message in the chat here. Okay. So over time, I started having doubts, and later on, I found out that she was cheating on her husband. And when I told my ex, she would hide the secret from her own father. So at that point, a lot of other things happened, but I realized that I couldn't trust her anymore. And she ended up fucking a friend of mine. So there you go. But in the end, I was thinking, the question is related to this, is when a woman goes out to the world to look for a boyfriend or whatever, she looks for a guy that is more similar to her father or different to her father? The personality of the guy that she's looking for is similar or different to her father?
I have a theory on this, but I want to hear Sean, because he's a doctor.
Yeah, the answer is I don't know. It depends on what people do is they go out and they repeat their patterns. And so, it's not so much that a woman will pick someone like her father. It's that somebody will generally pick someone that behaves like one of their parents. And it could be either one, because it's a pattern that we're familiar with. So I don't know if that answers the question.
As a guy myself, I noticed that I kind of married a version of my mother. Okay. Now, what I've noticed is that people tend to try to reconcile the discrepancies that their parents had between each other in their own relationships. Like, they'll put up with a lot of bullshit because they saw their parents go through it, and they'll think that they've got some secret weapon or a magic wand or something they can wave to solve this with their own relationship with whoever it is that they're with. And I've seen this a few times. Now, obviously Sean's, got a different view on it, but I'm just kind of holding up a mirror and, reflecting back some facts. I don't know how accurate they are over a larger consensus, but it happens, dude. Like, it's always going to happen where there's going to be some element or some degree of something that they're trying to sort out with, whether it's from a past relationship or some past trauma that they saw in their childhood. But just be attentive, like you are, have your wits about you, and just look for those warning signs. And if there's any kind of mirroring, I always say do recon on the parents, and more specifically do recon on the mother, because that's more than likely going to be what she's going to look like 20, 30 years down the road, right?
Besides the looks, also the psychology is going to be similar.
Yeah, it's both of those things. I mean, at the end of the day, women are typically beauty objects to men. So you want to see how well she's going to age, one. And two, is her mom batshit crazy? Because that could potentially happen to her too. I mean, I think that these sorts of things happen more amongst women than they do amongst men as they age. So you just got to, you know, you want to have your wits about you with stuff like that for sure.
Okay, cool.
Does that help?
That's very good advice. Yeah, of course. I am worried because, you know, you can always analyze how people behave and try to, you know, become a better observer, but it's like a little blindness when you look at something that is very, you know, unconscious or that you don't realize that you're doing so.
You have to collect data points, right? You know, if you have a chart and then you're starting to collect data points on certain behaviors, there's going to be a pattern where it starts to show up in a certain area of the chart, right? So that may take months. It's not going to take a few weeks of getting to know somebody. Sometimes it'll take months. It might even take a year or two, right? I mean, Sean says in his book, and I don't mention this in enough of these broadcasts, but Dr. Sean Smith, Tactical Guide to Women, is a must read. It's linked in the description of all of my videos below. But, you know, he talks about it quite clearly. Like, give it some time so that you can see these patterns show up. If they do show up,
yeah,
it can be a year and a half.
Yeah. And I love that you were paying attention. And when the parents had the affair and the daughter got dragged into the secret keeping, you were paying attention. And there's an ethic now in this family that says, okay, we keep secrets and we trick people, and you were watching and you were paying attention. So good on you for catching that.
Yeah. But should I have said something? No, I think no. It's not my business. I mean,
you're not going to change it. You're not going to change her mom cheating on her dad. You're not going to change like any of those behaviors, right?
No, of course not.
It's, but you know, it's not for you to fix. It's just for you to identify and then decide, you know, if you're going to just spin it as a plate or if you're going to put more distance between you and her, right? Or whatever it is that you want to do.
Yeah, of course. But the doubt is, I mean, if you have a good relationship with her dad and you care about the guy and you realize that he's being fucked on, shouldn't, out of respect for the guy, hey, dude, I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this, but your wife is cheating on you.
That's a tough one. If it was my friend, then yes. But you're talking about somebody at an arm's length. I mean, if you're done with the relationship with her, then, I mean, you could pull them aside and go, hey, by the way, you know, I know your daughter and I are finished, but you need to know that your wife's been banging so-and-so from the whatever, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that because it would be considered like a revenge towards my ex. So,
yeah, or it could just be you. Or it could just be you looking out for another brother.
Yeah.
Well.
That's a tough spot to be in. I hate that the mother put the daughter in that position of keeping the secret. And now you're in the position of keeping the secret. And now their problem is your problem. That's all nonsense. Who needs that in their life?
Oh, the webs we weave.
Yeah.
Yes, that. Yeah, lucky for me, I'm no longer with her. But well, that's the kind of stuff that can happen when the parents are dysfunctional. I believe. I don't
Correct.
Know.
Correct. All right, man.
Well, yeah, that's
Thank
very
you.
Good.
Thank All you, right, guys. Brother.
Bye bye.
Talk soon. All right. I just want to get the super chat up here because I skipped over it. Where the hell is it? Chris from Philly, was it? Chris B in Philly. Chris B in Philly, thanks for the super chat. Appreciate that, brother. All the support goes to the making of these shows with Sean and I. Thanks. So we got a few guys in the waiting area. Z's, James, going to get to you in a second. We got Paul, my brother from another mother.
What's up? Can you see me? Because I can't see anything.
No, that's fine.
Not just, much.
Yeah, just run the audio if you don't have enough bandwidth.
All right, cool. That's fine. You guys can hear me okay then, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, not much. Just playing around
Afghanistan.
Yeah.
You know. So,
Paul's out getting some bad guys.
Just 5 a.m. here, and thought I'd call in. This is a good topic. Can you guys hear me?
Yep, you're loud and clear.
All right, there, good. So, I guess I'll just jump in. Almost got caught in a trap, you know. My last LTR, and there are some major warning signs regarding how she grew up in her family. And so I just want to share that little anecdote and then question, of course, so, for both of you guys. That's cool. So, I mean, she grew up pretty rough and in and out of foster care, you know, parents on drugs, a lot of things going on. And I won't get into all the details, but it's as bad as it could be. And she had done a fair amount of work on her own to try to like overcome that stuff. But the tragedy was it eventually all caught up, you know. We use the term BPD just kind of as a catchphrase, but obviously we're not diagnosing every chick with BPD, you know, but sometimes they just have those behaviors because they're dysfunctional. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that was the case here, was that she had gone through so much childhood trauma, had so many issues regarding abandonment and all kinds of crap, that as soon as she was in the relationship she wanted with the Chad she wanted, she would sabotage it and destroy it and create indignation to a point that is beyond what a normal female would do. You know, I mean, every female creates indignation, but I mean, it was to a degree that was unreal. And it was as soon as any uncertainty happened, you know, it was all of these now behaviors of sabotaging that relationship and devaluing me at the time was basically happening. And, you know, in a nutshell, she didn't see herself as SMV high enough to be with me. So, I know it sounds egotistical, but this just is what it is, which is actually bullcrap, but that's how she saw it. So she would try to tear me down and break me down, you know, and devalue me, so that she could be, you know, that shift that power, I guess, you know, and healthy coping mechanisms such as, you know, hey, this argument's getting too heated. I'm going to go to the gym. Let's cool off for a little bit and talk about it in a couple hours. Those kinds of coping mechanisms didn't work because it would bring up all these abandonment issues and these problems. And so her behavior towards the end, it was very much like a BPD chick. I wouldn't diagnose her that way, but as long as she has all of this trauma from childhood, and it's attachment trauma is what it is, she's going to carry that into every relationship she gets in, which is exactly what she's been doing ever since she started, you know, having sex, right? Like, that's just been her pattern. And I thought I could out Chad that pattern, and I was completely mistaken. So I mean, just, you know, obviously family trauma is an issue, because if they don't have these coping mechanisms, it doesn't matter, you know, everything else. It doesn't matter your frame, like none of that shit matters. They'll never be able to be healthy enough to be in that relationship with you for very long. They will sabotage it, which is exactly what she did, forced me to break up with her. Now the question, so there's the backstory and kind of the, yeah, I don't want to spend all day here. I know you got other callers, but, you know, that's just kind of the warning sign there, is that when somebody doesn't have healthy coping mechanisms from childhood, the risk is that they're going to carry those into their current relationships and your relationship with her. And it won't show up immediately. That was the other point. Like, a year went by, it was fine. You know what I mean? It was when we were solidly in LTR status and we actually ran into some, you know, some trouble, I guess, you know, just some uncertainty. When that uncertainty cropped up, that's when all these patterns emerged and she became very toxic. So now the question, so that's the backstory. Hopefully that was valuable. Question is, what vetting mechanism do you use to cut sling load, as we would say in the military, and move on from that relationship? I have my own answers, but I wanted to hear what you guys say. Would you say that you would immediately look at these warning signs and say, nope, too much, too many red flags, not doing it? Or would you look at other mitigating factors and considerations? So that's the question.
I'll let you go, Sean.
Wow. I would look at the mitigating factors first. Does she have a plan? Is she aware that she grew up in a situation that has left her a little bit hobbled in relationships? And if she's aware of it, what is she doing about it? And if the answer is no, she's not aware of it, then I guess you could be a nice guy and make her aware of it and see what she does with it. If the answer is she knows and she's not doing anything about it, then no. It's just a solid no.
Right.
I don't have anything else to add to that, brother. I mean, we've talked at length when we met up in Detroit, but it's like, is she doing the work? Yes. Okay. Maybe you want to give her some time if she ticks off a bunch of boxes. If she's not doing the work or doesn't acknowledge that there's work to be done, it's see you later, dude.
Right. Well, the confusing and tough part about it was that she was acknowledging that work in the beginning. You know what I mean? And because she was completely in my frame and completely wanting to be what I envisioned for a relationship was what she wanted to have and be. And,
right. But did she actually make forward progress to becoming a better version of herself with that work? Or was it just lip service?
It was a lot of lip service and a lot of, it was acting. You know, she presented herself a certain way very convincingly. And then that started to break down really when we cohabitated. Mm-hmm. So that was when she was able to keep it under wraps. Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, she was able to keep it under wraps. Well, just because she couldn't hide it. Like when I'm, you know, she was literally mustering up all of her energy to be a pleasant person to be around when I was with her, you know, and when you live with somebody, you're going to see them both at their worst and at their best. And well, that's when things really took a turn for the worst. So, but I mean, that's also why, you know, Sean advises a 2-year period, right. And a vetting process and not jumping into marriage or, you know, something where you're putting, you know, name to contract at least for at least a couple of years.
I advise no less than a year after the honeymoon season has passed, in the honeymoon phase. Right. But, you know, the flip side of this conversation is that somebody who grows up in that kind of situation can turn out to be incredibly insightful and really good at relationships if they do the work. It's sort of like somebody who's gone through, had a substance abuse problem, and they've gone through treatment, they've gone through program, and they've got a couple of years sobriety under their belt. Man, that is one of the most insightful people you're ever going to meet. So you don't discount somebody, obviously, I mean, nobody's saying this in this conversation, but you don't discount somebody just because they have that traumatic history. It's what they do with it that is the deciding factor.
Right, right. I definitely agree with that. The problem too, I'm finding with females, and this is in coaching and working with men, and if I clicked out there for a second, but no, coaching, working with other men and soldiers and just my own, you know, experiences, is women nowadays, particularly under 30, don't have that personal responsibility, you know what I mean? A lot of times to do that work. And so that's the problem. It's, you're really looking for somebody who's, you know, on a female side of it, who's kind of a rare person.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't be totally shocked and surprised with the way society is and how it reinforces, you know, all the attention that these women magnetically draw from the world. I mean, all they have to do is post one picture on social media of themselves in a bikini, and if they looked half decent, they're going to get a ton of eyeballs, right? So they don't need to take any kind of responsibility at that stage. They're usually not even looking to take responsibility. They're just looking to get attention, right? So it's only when they kind of get closer to that epiphany phase, when they're in their late 20s and early 30s, that they're like, maybe I need to do a little bit of work on myself here. Maybe I need to, you know, take some responsibility for some of my choices in my life. But usually by that point, it's usually a little bit of too little too late, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Well, and a lot of times,
but it all boils down to, Paul, is if there's ever a conflict between actions and words, it's always believing the actions, and the lip service is always going to drown out, in my estimation now. And you, of course, know this too by now, because you're already doing the same sort of stuff yourself in your own work, is when the action conflicts, it's always believe the action 100% of the time.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, and like I said, I had my own opinions and very similar to what you're saying. I just thought I would open it for discussion because
the topic is. No, this is a good share on this topic because this is tied into like the Batman origin story of her upbringing and her family. And it's a good piece. How's everything going out there, man?
It's going pretty good. You know, I mean, at my end, I guess I got the,
I mean, like, you're on a bit of a sabbatical from the ladies. So, cause you know, you're
well,
or are you?
So as much as, definitely different than civilian life. There's not as much, selection around here. We'll put it like that, but that's okay. You know, it's not really my, my focus. Like, I don't really, you know, I'm at a point in my track record at this point in my life where I really don't care. Like, I really don't give a shit. Like, yeah. I like having women in my life, and when, and they come into my life when, you know, when it's convenient, and when they're not. In this case, like a deployment, I mean, they're not, I don't have to go monk mode, anything like that. Just focused on my purpose here, which is pretty busy. You know, there's a lot of violent stuff going on that doesn't hit your media. So it's about as unstable as you could imagine in this country. So we're hammering that out. I'm in about 8 different provinces as an advisor. So I'm too busy to plate spin, but you know, but still I got females at home and all that.
Be safe, man. Yeah, yeah. You know, you're at the point now where it's like, you know, you're not going to put up with bullshit, but you're happy to have them in your life if it doesn't come with too much drama.
Well, yeah. And I don't need them for validation. That's the big thing. Yeah. Like a lot of guys are like, oh, I got to spin plates, or like, I'm going to get one-itis and I freak out. Like, I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I know my sexual market value. I know that I can get women when it's time to get women. And it's just a matter of having a quality, I mean, quote unquote, right? But I mean, having a good match, we'll say, you know, in my life, and it's all good. And I have actually have one, you know, that's been pretty loyal, hanging out in Michigan, kind of, you know, we've been in contact quite a bit. And that's
Yeah, I know all about it. All right, brother, we're gonna move you along because I got a bunch of people waiting in the area, but thanks for hopping on tonight, man.
All right, yeah, it's good talking to you, good catching up.
Thanks. Be safe, man. Guys, talk to you soon.
All right,
cheers.
Thanks, Paul.
Fuck, I love that guy, he's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay, we got a bunch of folks in the waiting area. James, I'm going to throw you on next. I just want to make sure I got that super chat up there. I did. Welcome to the new members again. Thank you for the support. By the way, let me throw up this banner real quick. I don't think I left it up long enough. Men's community is for the guys that are really chasing excellence in life, that want to put a dent in the universe, want to make more bank, want to understand the sexual marketplace of women better. I have a lot of premium content there behind the paywall. It's just entrepreneursandcars.com/community. And the link is in the bottom there. James, you have a question for us tonight, or you got an experience you want to share?
Yes. Rich and Sean, thank you so much for letting me ask a question, and really like you guys' content and about the Sean's book and the audio and the books. And yeah, it's awesome. My question is, how can I vet a girl I just started dating, like to see if she is a narcissist or not by a subtle way without to like offend her?
So, sorry, you're asking if you want a vet to see if she's a narcissist?
Yeah.
Okay. Is she on social media?
She's on social media, but not like a super posting that way.
Okay. So, is she looking for attention with her posts?
We add Snapchat each other. Like, sometimes she posts, but like not like a crazy everyday, like 3-4 posts, something like that.
How old is she?
Maybe like a post. She's like 29.
Does she have an Instagram account?
Yeah, she do have an Instagram account then, but
what does she post on Instagram?
She don't have a. She posts herself and her with her dog, but not like a lot of posts like daily. And now she's in school and she quit Instagram and she just do Snapchat now.
Okay, so why do you think she might be a narcissist? Like, why are you asking to vet her for this?
Well, the reason is I think I saw some clue or something like that. I mean, like. We was like getting know each other, right? And I mean, like, I really want to ask her some question about herself, what she do, what's her background, where her come from. And she, I mean, like, she's enjoying to answer, but like, it seems like she's not quite interested in my background and my original story. Or, I mean, like, I feel like she focused on herself a lot, but she's not quite interested on my side. Maybe she's just not that quite into me. But I also afraid maybe she just like it. She just cannot see like she only focus on herself. So I don't know if this is necessary, a narcissist trait or not. But I'm just trying to figure out like if there's a subtle way, like a online test or some like question I can just subtly ask. So like try to figure out if she is have narcissist tendency or not.
Sean?
Well, She sounds like most people. Most people aren't very inquisitive. Most people won't ask you about your story. Most people won't reciprocate when you ask about it. That's just sort of how most people are. But if you're concerned about some clinical level of narcissism, the thing to really look for is if she walks into a room, does she suck all the air out of the room? In other words, she walks into a room and somebody's having a conversation. She has to insert herself in that conversation and turn it toward her. She has no tolerance for anybody else speaking about themselves or indulging themselves in any way. It's almost like it's uncomfortable. It is uncomfortable for a narcissist not to be the center of attention.
Oh.
Is that what she does at social events? Have you seen that?
No. I took her some social events. Like she's pretty quiet. She's pretty shy, and she talked with her friends, but she didn't talk with like stranger or something. Like, I don't think so.
Have you read?
So when she talks,
Joe. Sorry, I was going to say, have you read Joe Navarro's Dangerous Personality Types? There's four main ones. Have you read it?
No, I haven't.
Read that book because that'll kind of take Sean's book into a slightly different direction. Like Sean's more vetting for long-term and how to keep the wrong women out of your life sort of thing. Joe focuses based on his career. I don't know what it was, CIA or FBI or something, but he was basically a profiler and he identified the four main dangerous personality types. And there's a long laundry list of descriptive terms for the personality types. I think there's over 100 for each one. Realistically. So if you're getting close to 100 and it's descriptive to her personality, then yes, flat out. But everybody's got at least some of them, right? So that's a good one to check out if you want to vet for problematic women. That's a great piece to read for sure.
Okay, I will check it out.
And actually here, I got it here somewhere in my storefront. I'll grab the Amazon storefront link and I'll pop it in the chat for you guys. I've got all my book picks in there, and I think Joe Navarro's book is in there as well. There's a little affiliate commission that goes to me if you buy any of those products. So take a look at the book reading list. There's some stuff in there that you might find useful.
Okay. All right. Will.
Okay,
thank you so much, Sean. Thank you so much, Rich. Appreciate it.
See you, brother. All right. Who do we have up next here? Okay, Colin, I got you coming up. I see you moving around, though. I'm not sure if you can talk. Is your audio clean? How are you?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're good. Okay, awesome.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm gonna walk out of this noisy area real quick.
Okay.
Give me 2 seconds.
So tell us what's up tonight.
Yeah. So, long time listener, big time fan of you guys. First time caller. So, I appreciate and love everything you guys do. My question, well, it's more of a question. It's sort of on topic, sort of off, I guess. I'm seeing someone right now.
Oh, you froze up. I think you're losing your Wi-Fi signal, bro. All right, I'm going to pull you out of the stream. Colin, if you can still hear me, you need to get with a strong signal because you're breaking up. I'm going to throw you in, Dave. Go ahead.
Hey, you go. How you doing, guys?
Good.
I figured I'd just share some experiences that I've had over the past like 10, 12 years with a narcissistic ex that I just divorced 2 years ago. And her family was just a whole train wreck. So I figured I'd just share some of those experiences.
Yeah, okay, fire away. What did you learn?
Well, one thing that I can first say about the last caller, James, when he was asking, you know, different traits or things to look for in somebody, you know, kind of do a narcissistic test, tell her no to something that's, you know, to little of no consequence and see how she reacts to that. If she goes ahead and does it anyways, or tries to like go around the obstacle in some way, then that might be a good indication that she's got some narcissistic traits.
Okay.
And then what was it? The first guy you were reading an email about, or a message that he had,
he was having an issue with his girlfriend's father.
Yeah.
She would send him a birthday present. He would tear up the present and go to her work and throw it at her in front of her coworkers.
Yeah, that sounds really similar to a situation that I had. So my my wife at the time, her mother was, I would consider, a huge covert narcissist. And like everything was about her. Even when we were planning our wedding, like she made everything about her. She had to design the, everything about the wedding.
You still went through the wedding, of course, because you guys got married.
Yeah. And the similar thing, like I felt like I was pulling her one way and, you know, her folks were pulling her another way. And, you know, it just, you know, in the end, it didn't work out, even though we had tried to distance ourselves from her family, especially like her parents. It just, family's family, and you really can't like disconnect completely from family in most
cases. That's an important point that I think needs to be emphasized, because people don't understand that whoever it is that you're dating, they're always going to choose their family over you, like 99 times out of 100. It doesn't matter if you're the king of the country. Yeah. Chances are she's probably going to pick her they're very similar to single moms, in the way that single moms almost always pick their kids' bad behavior over what's best for the relationship or over what's best for the kids. It's the same thing with family, right? I mean, you're just going to have to deal with it. So if you see any of those red flags, don't ever think for a minute, oh, I can fix this. I got this one too.
Yeah,
I built a million-dollar company. I can fix your family while I'm at it.
I totally thought that, back in the beginning of the relationship, I thought, she's just sheltered and just kind of naive, and maybe I can, help her develop as a person and everything. It's just, in the end, she was just like them. And yeah, she kind of defaulted back to her family and deeper than water. So yeah.
Did you have a question for us tonight, Dave?
Not really a question. I just wanted to share that experience. And, but longtime listener.
Thanks. Sean, you're taking a deep breath there. You want to?
Yeah. I'm going to tell you something that I notice in my practice. It's that, when somebody comes from this kind of family, and a lot of people come from this kind of family, if they on their own have decided this is not going to be part of my future, I can have my family, but they got to keep their problems over there on the other side of this big bright line that I'm drawing. When they make that decision on their own, then typically what happens is that when things get a little rough or challenging in the relationship, the family doesn't become so much of an issue. It's when the person hasn't made that bright, clear line with their family, then when things in the relationship get kind of tense, that's when all of the family crap comes flooding in. And so that's why I say it's not so important that a person doesn't come from this background. It's that they come from this background and they're handling it on their own, regardless of whether they're in a relationship or not.
Mm. Yeah. Instead of pushing it off into,
because another. Yeah, exactly. Because the significant other can become their escape.
Yeah, well, actually, I became the scapegoat for all the problems that their family was having.
Was there a period where you were her escape?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so you went from escape to scapegoat when things started getting rough.
Yeah, well, she didn't blame me, but her parents did. To the point where, while we were doing the wedding planning, they didn't like how things were going and how we were kind of pushing back on what they wanted to do for the wedding. Even though we weren't like demanding anything crazy, they scheduled a meeting with their pastor without me so they could talk about this stuff. Yeah. And then I inserted myself in there, and you're like, you know what? She's going to be my bride. I'm going to be there. You can't be talking about me behind my back. So I went there, and the pastor was actually on our side, but that only patched up the problems, short term. And then
how long did that marriage last?
7.5 years. The good
any
old
kids out of it?
Yeah, one daughter. She's 5.
How's that going for you right now?
She's living with the mother in Texas. I'm in Virginia. I got pretty much divorce raped, had to live in my mom's basement for 2 years, but now I have my own apartment.
Right.
And I'm doing good, chasing excellence.
How often do you see your daughter?
I see her, well, Thanksgiving or Christmas, we alternate for those, and then spring break, and I get all summer. But okay. And I try to go visit her as well. But
good. Good. Yeah. All right, man. Well, I'm glad you got out of that, but yeah, that's rough because now you're dealing with the fallout of marrying into a crazy family sort of thing, right?
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing that experience, brother.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Cheers. That's rough. I hate when
I hate when
guys get horse raped and they end up in their mom's basement. It's just bullshit the way that guys get treated in family law, but it is what it is, man. You guys are going to wife up these women in the Western world. This is a potential outcome of it if you know you're not careful. Okay, the link to join is there in the chat. It's just this is right there after Ask a Question Live. It's got streamyard.com. Just click that. Josh will make sure your audio and video is solid. Make sure you got a good signal, because if you got to walk somewhere and you get away from the signal, it's going to break up like it did for Colin. So Colin, if you're still listening, join back in. Happy to put you back on and take on the conversation. We've got to make sure the signal's good. Let me quickly shout out to the channel sponsor. There's a way I can go solo layout. There we go. Channel sponsor, Grondyke Soap Company, tactical soap and beard oil. Handmade, pheromone infused soap. I just noticed that Dan Bilzerian started up a pheromone infused man's fragrance company. So he's competing with Scott and Grondyke, but this is the original stuff, guys. Works great. Reviews are incredible. It's a quality product. The beard oil is awesome. There's a link in the description below. Grab one. Let me just grab the code real quick here just so I can put it on there while you guys are clicking through to ask your questions. There it is right there. If you check out with coupon code Cooper, you're going to get 10% off, or you can just go to coopersoap.com, and that's an easy way to do it. But there's a link for Tactical Soap. So appreciate the support. Guys, we got some room in for calls. We're on for another 20 minutes or so. So click that link, get yourself on, and ask your question tonight. Sorry, I'm just typing and talking at the same time here. Let me go back here to this screen, and boom. Welcome back, Sean. I saw you getting up and running off for a bit. Is the dog getting active for you?
Yeah, my intuition is talking to me. I got this thing where I, you know, this perceptual thing where if I hear something that's a little bit off, it's just incredibly loud to me. And I could tell the dog was chewing on something, but it didn't sound quite right. And so I went and got this this pen that she was chewing on.
There you go.
Intuition was talking to me. Hey, you want to hear my little story about the ex-girlfriend with the crazy family?
Yeah.
So this was in my early 20s. And I'd been dating this girl for a couple of years, and she was a wonderful human being. Like just the kind of person who lights up a room when she walks in, and she's thoughtful and she cares about everybody. And she's really in touch with what's going on around her. And you know, she had her annoying side. She was a little disorganized and so forth, but she was just a wonderful human being. And so we dated for a couple of years, and we were starting to get kind of serious. I was probably 22, 23. And way too young to be thinking about marriage, but you know, I'm 23 and I'm dumb. So start getting more in with the family. And the family was like the opposite of her. Her mother was a batshit crazy feminist. And this was 30 years ago. So she was like a prototype of today's angry feminist. So think of a Cro-Magnon feminist. That's what this woman was like, to the point where you would go to her house and men were not allowed to go upstairs. They were only allowed on the small main level. And this wasn't about maintaining chastity or anything like that. This was a political statement that men were not allowed to set foot on the landing and go upstairs. And a landing that a man paid for, by the way, because as far as I could tell, she didn't contribute anything to the planet. And I had this moment one day where I flashed forward and I thought, if this keeps going in this direction, this miserable battle axe is going to be my mother-in-law. And it was a horrifying thought. As wonderful as my girlfriend was, and she was truly wonderful, there was no separating her from her family. And she didn't really, you know, she didn't sign on to all the crazy feminist stuff, but, there was no separation there. Like the mother was going to come with the girlfriend, and that was it for me. It was kind of a slow, painful breakup, but that was the moment when I knew that this just was not an option for me. I wasn't going to have that kind of hatred in my life.
Yeah. You're always going to become the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And you have to include family in that evaluation. It's part of the equation because family's forever, you know, blood's thicker than water. It always has been and always will be. David.
Yay.
Welcome.
I'm back again. My wife's mother passed away just recently, and she was a full-blown BP person. And I'm surprised that my wife hasn't had any more serious side effects, and we've been married for 35 years. So I don't know if there's any long-lasting crossover that I have to be worried about, or whether I'm good to go because I made it this far.
Well, what are you concerned about?
Well, whether there's going to be any BPD fallout from my wife.
Does she have any of the personality traits you saw in the mother-in-law?
No, she hated her mother.
Was there a lot of distance between her and her mother when, you know, since you guys have been married?
There's been distance, yes. She's avoided. In fact, she left home because of that. She didn't want to be influenced by her because she could see the manipulation that her mom had, you know, had done on her whole family. You know, all the brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I've seen a version of that before. I mean, I have friends that I know that have lovingly fired their family, whether it was their mom or their dad or whoever was toxic, and they'll still see them, you know, at Thanksgiving or Christmas, just, you know, at an annual event. But aside from that, they don't give the relationship any energy. And they just made it clear, look, you know, I don't feel like this is serving me or you're providing any benefit to my kids, or you're rubbing my kids the wrong way, or you're setting the wrong example in front of my kids. I've seen that a few times. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It seems like she caught on to the personality disorder and just arm's length will keep it away. So unless you're seeing anything, I mean, there's nothing to be worried about as far as I see. I mean, Sean, what do you think, man? You ever see this?
People firing their families? Yeah, it happens. It's got to be done sometimes.
Yeah. And I think that people hold on to toxic families longer than they should. Most people do anyway, just because it's family and they share DNA or they have the same last name, and they have a hard time saying no. And they tolerate a lot of toxicity and a lot of abuse unnecessarily, even though they recognize the problem is there. So having the wherewithal, like having the ability to say no to your mom or your dad if they're toxic, that's pretty good. You know, that's a solid person.
Yeah, she when we're making retirement decisions, Colorado was a choice, but she had family in Colorado, and that's where mom lived, and we just decided, let's go try a different location.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, 100% behind that decision. So I can't say that she's been affected terribly.
Yeah. If she's avoiding an entire state, she's clearly serious about it.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Believe those actions.
Now during her mom's decline, she was doing a lot of phoning and that kind of thing. Cause her mom couldn't see, she couldn't hear. So she was doing a lot of phone calls, and her stress level just ratcheted up, and, you know, then went into the toxic eating type of thing to reduce stress. Mm-hmm. So I've got to deal with that backlash.
But what do you mean by toxic eating?
Well, she's addicted to food, and we're on a keto diet, and we're, you know, her default fallback was comfort food, you know. So
sugars, pastries.
Yeah. She's addicted to bread and that kind of stuff. So we're dealing with that problem right now, but,
does she get depressed when she eats all that sugar and carbs?
No, she gets real frustrated
because she gets frustrated with herself about it.
Yeah. She knows what she's doing and she knows why, but, the biggest source of that frustration is now, you know, buried and gone. So,
so what's she doing about that problem?
I don't know what, I don't know how you would describe it, but she's getting a grip on how she's starting to learn the conditions of what triggers that. And she's trying to back off of the triggers. So she's aware of it.
She sounds like a smart lady.
Yeah. Definitely.
Sounds like you got a good marriage, Dave, reasonably speaking. You know, considering the last guy who got run through the machine and doesn't see his kid. So be thankful.
Yeah, I am. You going to Orlando next week, Sean?
No, I had a scheduling conflict come up.
Too bad. You could have met her.
Yeah.
All right, Dave.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for hopping on. We'll see you later. Mm-hmm. Take care. All right. Let's see if we got any questions here in the chat we might have missed we should address before we wrap up here. Got another 9 minutes or so. We started off about a few minutes early, too. Well, I think we're all caught up. No super chats to catch up on. Lovely. Beautiful. By the way, guys, these broadcasts are available on podcast form. They have been for a while. I haven't mentioned it for a few weeks, but all your favorite podcast platforms, if you don't have time to watch live or on YouTube, you can just download it to iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, pretty much everywhere you can get a podcast. You'll get a audio version of this if you want to listen to it. Make sure you leave a review, give it a thumbs up, let people know they get some use out of it. Also, I know there's people that say that they'd love to be part of the community, but it's not at a price point that they're willing to work with. Just share this content. If you're getting value out of watching this stuff and Sean and I are giving you some answers that are helping you get unstuck, do us a favor, take the link, share it on social media, tell people to watch it, send it to somebody that might get some value out of it that might be stuck on a similar situation. I think on that note, we'll pretty much wrap up. Did you have any closing thoughts?
No, I like the guys. Actually, yeah, I guess I do. I like the guys calling in with cautionary tales tonight. A lot of guys talking about how they listen to their intuition, even if they didn't describe it that way. And man, that's good stuff. So if you guys take nothing else from this episode, take that.
Take that. Always listen to somebody when they share an experience with you. Oh, hang on. We got one guy in the waiting area quick. Okay, let's see if we can do this in 7 minutes. The Vet, welcome.
Hi, hello, Rich. Hi, Sean. How are you doing? I don't know if you remember me. I'm from Mexico.
Oh, are you the vet with the syringe that we saved your life?
Yes.
The horse tranquilizer. The vet. So you've decided to... Well, I'm glad that we put you on then because the vet was an interesting story. Just to bring you guys up to speed, he sent a letter to Rollo that Rollo forwarded to me, and basically a video on hypergamy. He went through some shit in his life, and as a veterinarian, he's got access to horse tranquilizers, and he figured out that he could pull the trigger and end it. But watching a quick video and reading the Rational Mail brought him back to us today. So welcome. How are things going?
They're going pretty good. Just spinning plates, as you guys said. Well, non-conventional dating, as Sean likes to say.
You can say spinning plates.
Things are going well, facing excellence, doing really well economically, and really, 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 really looking after becoming the best version of myself. So I just wanted to tell you a quick story just to support what you guys were saying, my side and my story. So what happened is when I found out that when I got my divorce and I found out that my wife was cheating on me, I actually went to her mother and trying to find a little bit of support, and I told her what was going on. What amazed me was her answer. When she heard my story, she said, well, that's because the way you are reacting is not the way that you should react. And I was like really, really thrown out of my place. And I was like, why? And her answer was, when this happened to me, I didn't act that way. And I'm still married to your wife's father. And I was like, what? And yeah, she told me a quick story where she actually found out that my former wife was basically the pimp of her dad. And she was actually the excuse, and he would take her horseback riding, et cetera. And he would leave her with a trainer, and he would have a fling with someone and have an affair with someone else. And then the mom found out. And then she played the good wife at home, forgave him. And basically, when I looked at that, and then when I went to therapy and all that, I found out that that's where everything started as an example for her. And it was the way her mom behaved. She allowed her to play that part with her dad. And that went on for a lot of years. And when we were about to get married, her dad actually went to all her cousins that found out as well and told them to not tell me that that had been going on. And once we got divorced, her cousins came to me and said, hey, we just wanted to tell you, when you said that you were going to get married, her dad came to us not to tell you all that happened.
So the mom was cheating on the dad?
No, the other way around.
The dad was cheating on the mom. And you said there was a pimp involved somewhere? Sorry, because you broke up a little bit. So you said that there was a pimp involved somewhere?
No, well, my former wife, she was the one that was covering for the dad, and she was only like 10 years old.
Okay. Got it. So she figured that because, you know, there was some infidelity in her parents' relationship growing up, that it was okay for her to pull the trigger on it?
Yeah, I guess that, because she actually saw it pretty normally and didn't find that. The family and her mom and her dad, no one looked at it as it was something really bad. It was
like in certain cultures, they just kind of, you know, turn a back to it. In certain places around the world, I mean, a lot around the Mediterranean, especially French culture, Spanish, Greek, Italian, it's pretty common. So it really depends on your upbringing, right? They just don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to go to dinner with their wife and have the extracurricular activity show up there as a surprise and embarrass them, sort of thing. So, again, it really just depends, dude.
Yeah, it actually was pretty bad, but it helped me find out that you really need to vet the girls really thoroughly and their families before you pull the trigger on an LTR or even
having any plan. How long did you wait before you decided to get married to her? Like, how long were you guys dating?
We dated for 6 months, and then we lived together for 2 years, and then we got married for 6 years.
Mm. And she was cheating on you before you guys got married or after?
She was cheating on me. Well, I found out
both.
After we got divorced, but she was cheating on me as from the moment we got engaged till the moment we got divorced. Several guys. Yes. She was diagnosed BPD.
Yeah. And then you learned about this after you guys got divorced?
Yes. Okay. I actually found out.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing that experience, man. I'm glad you're still with us today. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Take care. All right. That was interesting. Man, I love that guy. I remember when I read his letter. I'm going to get vulnerable here and be a little bitch, but I remember when I read his letter, like, I actually broke down and started crying when I was going down the breakdown about how he was sharing that experience about how he was about to kill himself with a horse tranquilizer. But anyway, there you have it. So this sort of work has meaning in people's lives. Thank you. Josh, thanks for screening the calls. Sean, again, thanks for joining me tonight. Appreciate the last words. We're supposed to be on every Monday night. So the next one's the 21st. You around for that?
You bet.
All right. So we'll catch up with you guys on the 21st. If you have a recommendation for a kickoff topic, you can leave a comment below or just send us a DM or a message somewhere on social. You seem to know where to find us nowadays. And again, give the show a thumbs up. There's 144 likes. Give us a bunch of thumbs up on this. Let people know that you enjoy it. Share it with somebody. Thanks for watching the broadcast tonight, and we'll catch you in the next.